to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Oh, yes, indeed. It is time to talk movies and more. Alan Adams of The Main Edge joining us, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Welcome, Alan. Welcome.
Hello, hello. How are you?
I'm well. Johnny Manziel, CFL. Tell us. Share your thoughts.
There will be certainly be an in-depth story in this week's Main Edge coming up on Wednesday.
Would hope so.
But I will tell you, it's one of those things. I think Mr. Manziel's style of play could translate to the bigger field up there in the Great White North. But that being said, dude hasn't thrown a football in a competitive game in what, 2 years now? Like, you have to wonder if his skill set may have eroded a little bit, especially considering we don't really know how he's been living over those past 2 years. We know Johnny Football maybe spent some time with Johnny Walker, if you know what I'm saying. Leaving that aside, they've already got a pretty good quarterback in Hamilton. Jeremiah Mazzoli put up really good numbers in 10 games or so. He took over as the starter about halfway through the season this past year.
I love that you know this and you have no notes at all.
He's a talented guy, but he's also a troubled guy. Like, he's a guy who got booted from the University of Oregon after 2 years. Wound up doing 1 year at I believe Ole Miss before going undrafted and winding up there in Hamilton. He's exactly the sort of player that Manziel is. He's got a really great arm, able to run the ball. I think he averaged something like 6.5 yards a carry in his starts. It was something like close to 450 yards in 10 games or whatever. So, I mean, he put up some really good numbers. So it's not like it's they're just handing the keys over to Manziel. And they've already said, just some of the early reports out of camp, it's not an easy adjustment for players to make. Like, it's a very different game, not just in terms of the size of the field, but you're dealing with like three downs, that sort of thing, which I think kind of negates a little bit of the scrambling improvisational stuff that was really, you know, a big part of Manziel's game. Like, you don't really have downs to spare for that sort of thing. That said, wider field probably means he's going to be able to move around a little bit more. And, look, if the kid can get his act together, we know he can play. I mean, it's like Heisman, you don't win a Heisman Trophy by accident. You know what I mean? So it's just a question of whether or not he's willing to put in the time and really commit to making this work.
Three Black Bears now, former Black Bears on the Red Blacks. Now, what's the quota they can have of non-native players?
It's about half and half.
Oh, okay.
You basically have to, and that excludes quarterbacks. So I think the breakdown in terms of the roster, I believe it's 21-20. Like, you have to have at least 21 Canadians versus 20 non-nationals. But it can, you know, obviously you can have more Canadian players if you want. But that's usually, as long as it's more than half, I think you're good.
I had to restrain myself not chiming in with but why would you want to? I have never watched a full CFL game. When you look at them comparatively, what sort of stadiums are they playing in? Yeah, the field is bigger, but from a crowd capacity standpoint, I mean, this is still a huge fan favorite.
You went to a game.
I did. I went to see a game in Montreal. I saw the Alouettes take on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders a couple years ago.
Were they jaunty?
What? they're smaller. They're smaller stadiums. Like, probably the biggest one in the league, I'm going to guess, is probably the Rogers Center, because, you know, the Argonauts play there.
Yep.
I assume when the Argos are in town, I imagine the seating is significantly different. I imagine their capacity for an Argonauts game is considerably less than a Blue Jays game.
By the way, before we get to the reason you're ostensibly here to talk movies, kudos on very nice work on public radio on Maine Calling last Friday, talking with Jennifer Rooks about improv.
Yeah, that was fun. I had a good time. Jen Shepard from Improv Acadia was there. A woman by the name of Erin Curran, who works with Portland Playback down there in Portland, was also present. It was a lively discussion. I think we had a lot of fun. I think the one of the delightful parts was literally everyone who called in was also in an improv group, yeah. which I thought was pretty funny. But yeah, no, it was a hoot. We really enjoyed it. I hadn't really done that sort of long form, you know, radio stuff before. Like this, you know, this it's in and out, like over in the blink of an eye. It feels like, you know, and so to sit in there for a good hour and really sort of engage with the callers and all that stuff was great. But ultimately, it was just a really nice opportunity to sort of celebrate the real, like, explosive growth of the improv scene here in the state of Maine.
And speaking of which, the Focus Group back with a show in downtown Bangor this Friday night.
That's right. We're at the Bangor Arts Exchange, May 25th. Shows at 8 p.m. I believe doors open at 7:30. Same great price, $5 at the door. Come in and see us do what we do, that voodoo we do so well.
There you go. All right, let's talk movies. Talk about ends of the film spectrum this weekend. You saw Deadpool 2 and Book Club. Where do we begin?
Oh man. Well, let's start with Book Club. Because it's a wonderful piece of counter programming. Like I understand it's smart to sort of, give people that sort of alternative. And like you said, it's really, as on either ends of the spectrum, pretty much as opposing as you can get as far as movies are concerned. Book Club wasn't as good as I feel like it maybe should have been. It's the sort of movie that, frankly, is it's a net positive simply because it exists. I think because it's the sort of thing where there aren't a ton of opportunities for older actors and actresses in Hollywood, particularly females. The roles for older women just aren't there as a rule, and so to see a movie put forth that not only gives them opportunities but really celebrates them and gives them puts them in a position to shine. I think is great. The stars of the movie, I mean, it's just a who's who of talented actresses of a certain age. You've got Diane Keaton, Jane Fonda, Candace Bergen, and Mary Steenburgen are your four, like your central quartet. They play a group of friends who have been part of the same book club for like 40 years, and so their relationship has developed. Jane Fonda plays a hotel magnate. And Candace Bergen's a federal judge. Mary Steenburgen is a chef, and Diane Keaton is the one who wound up supported simply staying home, raising kids, and supporting her husband's career. The central tenet is her husband. Diane Keaton's husband has passed away recently, and so her daughters, played by Alicia Silverstone and friend of downtown Katie Azleton.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Want her to move to Arizona to be closer to them. They're worried that she's, she's getting older and she's alone. Jane Fonda's character is a very, sex yes, intimacy no, kind of, that's the lifestyle she lives, but a specter from her long forgotten past arrives again. The man whose heart she broke when she turned down his proposal some three decades ago, played by Don Johnson.
Wow.
Mary Steenburgen is struggling with intimacy issues with her husband, played by Craig T. Nelson.
Hello.
Right? And Candace Bergen is looking to finally get back on the horse after 18 years. She divorced her husband nearly 20 years ago. Her husband, played by Ed Begley Jr.
I was afraid you were going to say Lee Horsley there.
She winds up, joining an internet dating service and going on dates with a series of familiar faces, including Richard Dreyfuss and Wallace Shawn.
That is fantastic.
Diane Keaton's love interest turns out to be, a sexy pilot played by Andy Garcia.
Dang.
Like, it's a phenomenal cast.
It's unbelievable.
But the entire narrative structure is built around the fact that the book club is reading the 50 Shades of Grey novels. Like, apparently, and as I'm not super familiar with the E.L. James bibliography, apparently the movie itself bears some structural similarities to the way the trilogy plays out. One line I saw online, which I thought was pretty clever. It's nice to know at least one decent movie was inspired by the 50 Shades of Grey novels. Look, it's, I mean, it's fine. It's fine because of the incredible talent involved. Like, the actual narrative isn't particularly interesting. The direction is pedestrian. But, I mean, again, that comes from the fact that you've got a first-time director who also co-wrote the script as a first-time screenwriter. And so it's just like, this is something very new for all the people behind the camera. So obviously, you know, there are going to be some missteps, and there's going to be some, you know, some stuff that's not necessarily going to work as well. The reality is, the movie does have, it has some laughs. It's a little clunky in the beginning. It kind of gets going in the middle before the sort of the end of the film kind of falls apart a little bit. But that being said, like, I had a good time. You know, my wife had a good time. And again, if you're someone who wants to go to the movies and isn't necessarily interested in people in spandex punching each other, you could do worse.
All right. What if you are interested in that sort of thing?
Speaking as someone who is very much interested in that sort of thing, I thought Deadpool 2 was great. Like, it was great. And I struggle with my love for Deadpool.
Because you hate Ryan Reynolds.
Because of my deep-seated antipathy towards Ryan Reynolds. it's one of those things where I've just had to make my peace with it, because the reality is he's so good.
Wait, because it's the perfect role for
it
him.
It is. It's the, I, you know, it's so rare to have such a perfect matchup between actor and role. And again, it's clear, like, this was a passion project for him for way back, and so, you know, he's clearly as committed to this as he is to anything, and so that energy definitely comes through. As far as plot, not that you necessarily need it, but Deadpool, played by Ryan Reynolds, has decided to you know, be on the side of the angels, but to do it in his way, and so that basically means he goes around the world finding major criminal kingpins and just murdering the crap out of them, just like slicing them and shooting them and generally taking care of business. Unfortunately, one of his kingpin targets gets away and winds up killing his girlfriend. And that's not a spoiler, because that literally happens before the opening credits. So it's like, I'm not going to worry about spoiling something that happens before you find out who the director is. And then he's heartbroken and tries to drown his sorrows. His friends are worried about him. His friends, played by folks like TJ Miller and Leslie Uggams. And he has to decide, whether he wants to be on the side of good. He winds up reteaming with the off-brand X-Men that are allowed to be in Deadpool movies. There's actually a great sight gag involving that I will leave to you, or to your imagination. You'll see it when you see it, and you'll have a giggle. From there, it just sort of you get kind of Deadpool-y. I don't want to do too much plot stuff because it kind of gives stuff away.
Right.
He winds up becoming sort of a protector of sorts to a young mutant who's dealing with some rage issues. Said mutant is the target of futuristic cybernetic super soldier from the future, Cable, played by Josh Brolin, who's having a hell of a summer.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The movie's basic plot is the conflict between those two. Deadpool puts a team together involving a series of C and D listers from the X-Men universe that are a lot of fun to check out. There's a their sort of get the band together scene is a delight. But yeah, it's very similar to the first movie. It's it very much leans into its R rating. It earns it pretty significantly. The curse words, lots of sex stuff, tons of violence and gore. And the big thing with Deadpool is the sort of the meta narrative, the idea of the character is aware of his status as a character in a comic book, and so there's a lot of fourth wall breaking. And a lot of snarky smugness, which again is so in Ryan Reynolds' wheelhouse that it's difficult to imagine something else. But yeah, it's super fun. Like, I'm a big fan of the superhero movies, as you know. But this one, one of the joys of it is it does go goes places that the traditional Marvel powerhouses can't go, just because of that R rating. And so you get something that's somehow both simultaneously more juvenile and more adult, than the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which, you know, for someone like me who is a 41-year-old man with the heart and soul of a 14-year-old boy, it couldn't be a better fit for me. So, yeah, Deadpool 2, yeah, you know what you're getting into. For the love of God, don't take the kids.
That's Alan Adams. And by the way, you're attracting fans as you talked about Deadpool 2. Groundhog, right out the window behind you, got right up on his haunches to hear what you thought about the movie.
Well, I mean, my poll with the Groundhog demographic's pretty solid. I don't know if you know that. I'm very popular with rodents of all kinds.
Well, I just hope he's waiting to go to the drive-in.
Yeah, oh, fingers crossed. Well, I mean, they just got those new chairs, right. So.
And you were worried about somebody spilling a Coke on him.
Yeah, Groundhog, God only knows.
Right, exactly.
Sounds like a member of the X-Force.
Groundhog, yeah. Woodchuck. Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
We'll see you back here on Wednesday. It's 5:30 on Downtown. Just ahead, Bombastic Bushkin remembers the king of late night, Johnny Carson. This is Z62 Retro Radio.
Hi, this is Eric.
And Christine.
From the Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, inviting you to come in and shop our carefully cultivated selection.